Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of June 9th through 16th. This week we spoke with Father Michael Suarez, a Jesuit priest who is the award winner of the Foley Poetry Contest this year. Father Suarez teaches at Fordham University here in New York as well as Oxford University in England. But before we start our interview, we thought we would read from his poem called Going. The poem begins with the epigraph, "Sometimes I think that Jesus must have been on the train, lost property auctioneer. Who left them, and how did they walk down the long platform at Reading or at Slough? Did they abandon their trusty wheelchairs or throw down their crutches and take the stairs, unaided for the first time in years, then hop into a waiting van and say, let's shop for dancing shoes at McMurray's on the way. Did they arrive and hurry up the nursing home drive shouting, I'm out of here, pack up my stuff and buy everyone a beer on me? Travel is a marvel, I know, but how could they up and out on their own without braces or canes, not noticing they walked without walkers, leaving passengers to talk of miracles or fraud? And why didn't they telephone to get their trophies and say, I've got to explain? And who was that nice conductor who came to my aid and helped me off the floor and said, walk and fall no more? And were there any witnesses so I can be sure of this business? Mind you, I don't mean to complain, though while I'm on the line I'll mention the train was more than 45 minutes late. It's hard to win, then the world knows you'll fail. Did even one return to thank British Rail? Again, that's the poem Going by Michael Suarez. We should note that Father Suarez's poems have appeared in journals such as the Berkeley Poetry Review and the Wallace Stevens Journal. He's won numerous prizes, including the Sir Roger Newdigate Prize for Poetry, the Martin Starkey Poetry Prize, and the Furman Houghton Award of the New England Poetry Club. He is also the co-general editor of the collected works of Gerard Manley Hopkins. We spoke to Father Suarez by phone from Los Angeles. We began our conversation by talking about the inspiration for this poem.
Actually, the germ of the poem came with being on a British Rail as it was then. British Rail doesn't even exist anymore, but it was being on a train in Britain. I spend 7 months of every year in the UK, teach at Oxford, and 5 months of the year in New York teaching at Fordham. And I think it was, you know, one of the times when I was working in the UK and I was taking the train to London and the train got stuck, actually, just outside of Reading. I had read epigraph to the poem in an article, and it stuck in my head, this idea that somehow I think that Jesus must have been on the train. And he was talking about all these, you know, walkers and wheelchairs that were in the Lost Property Office of British Rail. And so I was, you know, sitting there and just thought, took out a notebook and started to scratch some ideas for a poem, and that's how the germ of the poem really happened. But then, of course, one doesn't write a poem in a train ride, it seems
sure.
to me. So then later on, I worked on it quite a bit. And then I suppose, I would guess I finished it sometime in or maybe around 2003. And I wasn't happy with it. It had basically what's in the poem now, but there were problems with it, and I couldn't put my finger on them, really. I didn't like some of the cadences in particular. So then, just recently, maybe about 5 months ago or so, I took it out of the proverbial drawer where it's supposed to sit for 7 years, and really almost in a single afternoon, just kind of rewrote maybe about 20% of it. And thought, oh, okay, now it sounds the way it's supposed to sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me feel better about it, and then occasioned my sending it in to America.
Now, is that a strategy that you've employed in the past, that you'll put something in the drawer for a few years and then go back to it later?
Yeah, I like to write, you know, in the heat of the moment. I don't know about you know, emotion recollected in tranquility, but I like to, you know, write in a rush, but then, of course, really all good writing is rewriting, or at least most good writing is rewriting, it seems to me. So I like to let them sit for a time until I have a lot of distance from them. And you know, I suppose in that regard, at least I'm in good company, because there have been a lot of inveterate revisers and reworkers. And I think craft is hugely important. And one hopes as one goes on that one's craft gets better and sharper, and it's nice to go back and refine and point a little bit, I think. So, yeah.
Now, you have some local color in here, Redding, Slough, the McMurray's. What is McMurray's?
It's a dancing company.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a name for a company that taught ballroom dancing.
You obviously have been in the UK teaching for a number of years, so you sort of absorbed this, and it's become part of your writing.
That's right, and I think that even just some of the, some of the diction while I'm on the line and that kind of thing, not something an American would say, not generally anyway, but I think being in two places, and I did a lot of graduate studies in Oxford as well. I've been coming to Oxford since 1984,
okay.
Which is a long time. So I like having two kinds of diction in my head, really, and like the kind of freshness of American spoken English, but at the same time find some of the Anglo-Saxon roots of English spoken English help take me back to, the roots of our tongue.
Were you conscious of that when composing this poem, that you were an American writing in kind of a British dialect, as it were?
Yeah, very much so, because I think it has to ring true, and this is kind of a strange animal. I mean, it's a dramatic monologue of sorts, and yet at the same time, it's in couplets. And so, so I was just very mindful of trying to get it to ring true, trying to get the tone right.
Now, I was in contact with Father James Torrance, who's our poetry editor, and he was curious about how you chose the structure of the poem. You know, you do have some rhymes in here. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, I remember years ago, John Stallworthy was one of my teachers and a very fine modern poet himself. Some of the listeners may know him as prize-winning biographer Wilfred Owen, but I remember being in a class of his, and he was teaching Browning's My Last Duchess, a poem I had read many, many times, and then he just said in an offhand way, and of course, it's in couplets, and, the scales fell from my eyes, as it were, and I just thought, oh my goodness, I've read this poem all these years and never noticed that it was in these highly enjambed couplets, and I just kind of stored that away and thought, wouldn't it be fun to write a very enjambed dramatic monologue in couplets sometime? And, I think that the form and the subject have to work together, and I thought in some ways that the couplets might help something of the jocular quality of the poem, but also might have something to do with it's a railway poem and all that, and I just thought it would be appropriate. So I was hoping that the form and the subject would inform each other, really.
Now maybe you can just give a brief description of the enjambed notion. What exactly is that?
Sure. Well, be careful, because you're asking an English teacher, right? But basically, when we're talking about how lines in poetry finish, we think of them as either end-stopped, where they have a big pause at the end, or enjambed. It's a French term, enjambement, where they run into the next line. And if you look at the ends of the lines here, you see that there isn't a lot of terminal punctuation. The punctuation tends to be much more running into the middle, to create, again, a technical poetry term, medial caesuras, so that the poem pauses in the poem run more down the middle than at the end. And I was hoping that would help the rhyme flow into the conversational tone of the poem, or at least the monologue tone of the poem.
Now, you mentioned that the poem has a certain jocularity, and that's one of the things I like about it. It does have a little humor and wit to it. I find that it's difficult to write poetry, to write humor in prose? Is it as difficult in poetry?
I think it is, and I would like to write more humorous poetry about serious subjects, because I think that a lot of religious poetry, if you will, is confessional poetry, and I'm not sure that's always the best way in the 21st century to approach the religious subject. So obviously one wants to write it slant, however one does it, but humor is certainly one way in. And, you know, yet this is a poem that I think is pretty serious. You know, it's funny, but it's serious. It's about the miraculous or not. But I think that humor is tough, and it's difficult to gauge what someone's sense of humor will be, and one has to give certain cues to the reader, I think, too, about how seriously to take what's being said. In this particular case, I hope that the biblical allusion at the end to the 10 lepers, and I hope that the kind of internal rhymes help point up that jocularity.
Now, you mentioned that reference to the 10 lepers. Are there any other things, sort of, I'm sure there are, under the text here that are worth pointing out? Or that you're willing to discuss? I know some poets are a little reticent.
Well, and of course, one might have transparent intentions, but there are always other things going on.
Right, sure.
Yeah. I guess I would say that by the time we get to the nice conductor, who's this Jesus figure, obviously at least the way the poem works, that the game is pretty much up. At least I would hope so, and then I would hope that the double turn that comes after that, with the person complaining that the train was late, even though they were ostensibly cured, and then the kind of jab at British Rail, which is of course, you know, a good old whipping boy. You know, I wanted to have that combination of jocularity and seriousness too. You know, are there miracles in the modern world? And what would a miracle mean for us? So I think in general it's important that religious poetry be less overtly sincere and more about the presence of the noumenal in the world. I've been working on a collection for a long time that's tentatively titled The Nearness of Mystery. And I think that in some ways this poem would fit well into that category of the nearness of mystery. But how do we come at that in our everyday lives? And if the poet has to make it new, Walker Percy, Catholic novelist, once said, "Everydayness is the enemy." So, and he was talking about seeing the noumenal in the world. So I want people, even in this poem, which is just meant to make people laugh, to apprehend the noumenal or apprehend the problematics of what a miracle might mean, and how we come at these questions. Maybe
you mentioned that you were thinking of putting a collection together. Is this poetry a hobby for you, or is it more than that?
Yeah, I think it's more. I have a tension in my own life, I suppose, because being a professor and not just the pressure to publish, but the desire to publish. I'm a book historian. I write about the history of printing and publishing. I'm an editor. I'm right now co-editor of an 8-volume collected works of Jared Manley Hopkins that Oxford University Press is doing. I have a lot of projects on the go, but of course there's always a tension in me between wanting to be spending my time writing poetry and wanting, not just needing, but wanting to spend my time, you know, doing scholarly work. And I remember once talking to my doctoral dissertation advisor about this in Oxford and saying, gosh, you know, all this time I'm spending writing this doctoral dissertation, which I love and I really enjoy, you know, I could be working on some pretty good poems. And he was appalled, you know, by the idea. He just said, oh my goodness, you know, no, don't do that. Finish your dissertation. I said, oh, no, of course I will. And I love the academic life, and I'm passionate about that pursuit. But I'm equally passionate about the pursuit of poetry. And sometimes they are jealous lovers.
Well, that's a good analogy. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Gerard Manley Hopkins. So obviously, he's would be included among your favorite poets.
He is. He is. I think sometimes when people hear, you know, Jesuit, spends time in England, you know, writes poetry, then they say, oh, right, Hopkins. And that's a little problematic, it seems to me. I mean, Hopkins was sui generis in so many ways. You know, when he wrote his poems, nobody really accepted them. And if you look at the first edition of his poems that came out long after his death, published by his friend Robert Bridges, you know, Bridges in that first preface apologizes for the many primitivisms and infelicities of his friend and asks the poetry reading audience indulgence for this strange poetry. So Hopkins is, I love Hopkins, but there's more to religious poetry and more to even Jesuit poetry than Gerard Manley Hopkins. I mean, one person who's not perhaps suited to modern taste, but who I love very much, is an English martyr and saint named Robert Southwell. I guess many Americans would read the name and say Southwell, but Robert Southwell was himself a deeply accomplished poet way before Hopkins. So there's a tradition, and it's I wouldn't put myself in the league of those people, but it's humbling to think of oneself as part of that tradition.
Now, I should note that you're the first Jesuit award winner of this Foley Poetry Contest, which, of course, is sponsored by a Jesuit magazine. So that is something that you're the first to fall in that category. So
it's funny. I didn't know that, but I didn't put SJ anywhere on the on the entry because I thought, well, I didn't want to have an unfair advantage. So that's interesting to know.
Maybe you could talk about some of the other poets. You mentioned Robert Southwell and Gerard Manley Hopkins. Who are some of your other, perhaps, contemporary poets that you read?
I suppose among the old ones, that is to say, the old contemporary poets, people like Milosh and R.S. Thomas, Geoffrey Hill, you know, these are people, Richard Wilbur, these are people who are, you know, in a later generation now. Thomas is dead, of course. They've taught me a lot over the time. Geoffrey Hill writes a very difficult kind of religious poetry. Milosh, a fascinating mix of kind of orthodox and unconventional religious poetry. R.S. Thomas, a priest in the Church of Wales, has been perhaps the most influential of all the religious poets on me. But then, you know, among the moderns, my tastes are pretty eclectic. I'm a tremendous fan of Charles Wright. Edward Hirsch, I think, is writing some of the best poetry today. Evan Boland, of course. But even people, you know, Rosanna Warren is a fantastic poet, and I've learned a great deal from her. Or Carol Ann Duffy in the UK. I don't know how many American listeners might know Carol Ann Duffy's work, but it's well worth reading. And she's masterful at adopting these voices and creating these characters. Mark Strand, again, maybe a bit among that older generation, but he continues to write a lovely, lovely line. So I, you know, I think that if one's going to write poetry, one is part of a community, and I always tell my students, I don't teach creative writing, although I would love to, I always tell my students that, you know, if you want to be a writer, you have to be a reader first, and you have to inform yourself by, you know, what other people are doing and really, you know, study the craft, you know, with them.
Now, finally, I do have one more question. This was also brought up by Father Torrance. The title, Going, he had thought maybe it could be Going. Where'd you come up with the idea for that?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's kind of the going, gone. And so here the going is, on the one hand, the lost property auctioneer, but it's also the people, you know, going someplace. They're walking on their own, you know. I don't intend by that any allusion to, you know, Lord, to whom shall we go, but it's a poem about getting up and going. So there's the idea of, I think, evanescence in the title, I hope, but there's also the sense of that lost property being the artifact of whatever mysterious thing may or may not have happened on the train itself.
Well, Father Michael Suarez, thank you again for joining us, and congratulations again on winning, and perhaps we can talk again one of these days.
That would be great. Thank you very much indeed.
We want to thank Father Michael Suarez, who again joined us by phone from Los Angeles. We want to thank you for joining the America Magazine podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast at americamagazine.podbean.com. Again, we're on our weekly, bi-weekly summer schedule, so we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then, you can check out more content at americamagazine.org. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.